Hello, this is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service, with reports and analysis from across the world. The latest news 7 days a week. BBC World Service podcasts are supported by advertising.
Brought to you by Capital One, where you can open a savings account in about 5 minutes and earn five times the national average. Just imagine, five times more savings toward that overdue home addition, maybe even an addition on that addition. This is Banking Reimagined. What's in your wallet? Capital One, NA member FDIC.
This is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service. Hello, I'm Oliver Conway, and this edition is published in the early hours of Wednesday, the 1st of April. Our main stories. President Trump says the US is heading for a very tough 2 weeks as the American death toll overtakes China. Italy records a relatively low number of new infections for a second day in a row. And could the low level of fatalities in Germany be about to change? Also in this podcast, America changes tack on Venezuela.
If the conditions of the framework are met, including the departure of foreign security forces and elections deemed free and fair by international observers, then all remaining U.S. sanctions would be lifted.
And the Duke and Duchess of Sussex formally stepped down as senior members of Britain's royal family. More people have now died of COVID-19 in the US than in China, where the outbreak began. The current American death toll of 3,600 is also higher than the number killed in the attacks of 9/11. And there could be worse to come. At his daily news conference, President Trump said the nation was going to go through a very tough 2 weeks.
Our country is in the midst of a great national trial, unlike any we have ever faced before. You all see it. You see it probably better than most. We're at war with a deadly virus. Success in this fight will require the full, absolute measure of our collective strength, love, and devotion.
I heard more from our correspondent in Los Angeles, David Willis.
He said that Americans must be prepared for the worst in the next 2 weeks. It's going to be a very painful fortnight, he said. The chief medical advisor, Dr. Anthony Fauci, talked of hotspots still in New York and New Jersey, but he said that measures in place here were having an effect, despite the fact, as you mentioned, that the number of deaths in the United States has surpassed that of China, 3,400 plus deaths here. Dr. Fauci said that there was a need to put the foot on the accelerator, as he put it, to not let up. And he said this would be inconvenient, but it was needed in order to tackle this virus with intensity.
Well, let's look at the case of New York. It's struggling to cope, something like 75,000 infections as of Tuesday afternoon. The governor there, Andrew Cuomo, saying he needs to bring public and private hospitals together to prevent the healthcare system becoming swamped.
We need a totally different mindset and organizational transformation. We can't do business the way we have always done business. We need an unprecedented sense of cooperation, of flexibility, communication, and speed. The distinction of private, public, that has to go out the window. We are one healthcare system.
So a significant change there, David. What is happening in New York?
Well, this morning, the New Yorkers cheered, actually, Oliver, from the shoreline as the USNS Comfort arrived in Manhattan with a Coast Guard escort. That's there to help the city's medical staff combat the coronavirus. It's crewed, the Comfort, by civilian mariners. It gets most of its medical staff from a naval medical center in Portsmouth. And its sister ship, of course, the USNS Mercy, went from San Diego to here in Los Angeles last week with a similar mission, basically to provide additional beds. This particular ship staffed with more than 1,000 medical personnel, expected to start receiving patients as early as next Tuesday.
And on the subject of ships, the captain of a U.S. aircraft carrier, the USS Theodore Roosevelt, says he needs help because so many sailors on board are infected.
That's right. That particular ship has a crew of more than 1,000, but the captain reporting that more than 100 people on that vessel had tested positive for the coronavirus. And he was saying basically that because the ship is not being pressed into action, that perhaps the medical needs of those on board should take precedence now.
David Willis. Well, despite the huge number of cases in the US, Europe remains the epicenter of the pandemic. On Tuesday, Spain registered 849 deaths from coronavirus, its highest daily total. Italy had a similar number, but only a slight rise in new cases following that big drop on Monday, as I heard from our Europe regional editor, Danny Eberhard.
Well, I think the most interesting thing about Italy is that it's now 2 days in a row that we've seen relatively few new infections. The number of new infections rose by 2,100 over the last 24 hours. That's a rise of about 2.8%. It's slightly higher than yesterday, but overall it's much, much better than the figures we were seeing not too long ago. So I think they'll take encouragement from that. It's set against still some horrific death figures. 837 people in Italy still died in the last day, and 66 doctors have now died in the pandemic. So these are very, very traumatic figures. The country is trying to mark the people who've died and mourn for them. There was a minute silence today held at noon. It was organised by mayors across Italy, and some of them came out in their tricolour sashes and wearing masks to mourn really large part of a generation in parts of Italy.
Now, Spain, the second worst affected nation, had its highest death toll yet. They had hoped things were getting under control there. Is this a reverse in that position?
It's difficult to say for sure, because what you have, obviously, you have the people who are dying now are people who got infected, say, 2 or 3 weeks ago. So there's always a lag between the number of deaths falling and the actual number of infections. The infections is still rising in Spain. It rose about 11% today, so considerably more than Italy. Really, there's still very much a crisis. I mean, there's more people in intensive care beds in Spain than Italy. And if you look at the curve of the amount of deaths in the country, it's a steeper curve than Italy. So it's still very much of concern. But there is hope that actually, with the last couple of weeks of lockdown, things are starting to change, but it's a slow progress and, again, similarly traumatic, really, for the nation as a whole.
Well, let's have a look at the rest of Europe and Sweden. A lot of people are talking about that for being more relaxed than some other nations, but they're toughening things a little.
They are indeed. So, for example, they're saying now that you can't go to old people's homes. Sweden, obviously, has been seeing images from Spain, from Italy, from France of large numbers of people dying in old people's homes. So they're keen to avoid that. They are edging that way. They're also trying to encourage people not to go away, for example, on Easter breaks. Lots of people trying to get out to holiday homes and out into the country over the Easter weekend. So they've got that to come. And of course, what happens in these circumstances is you start to get a ratcheting up of restrictions. Here in Britain, obviously, they did a similar thing. They tried to ease people into the idea that things were going to get tougher. So I wouldn't be at all surprised if we see Sweden change considerably in the weeks ahead.
Danny Eberhard. Well, in contrast to the other big European economies, Germany still has a relatively low number of fatalities from COVID-19. That can be partly explained by the large number of tests it's carried out. However, a senior German public health official has warned that the death rate could rise. This report from Berlin by Jenny Hill.
They're working day and night in this laboratory. Germany tested early and it tested widely. It's estimated around 1 million tests have been carried out since the outbreak began here. It's an approach which is believed to have contributed to the relatively low death rate. Evangelos Kotsopoulos from Germany's Association of Accredited Laboratories says it certainly saved lives.
Many actually positive cases were picked up very early. So people were asked very early, already a month ago, to remain isolated. Contact people were traced and tested repeatedly and were isolated as well.
But some say Germany had luck on its side too. The majority of early cases involved young, relatively fit people, many of whom were returning from ski holidays in the Alps. Another cluster originated at a carnival. The average age of an infected person in Germany is 47, but that's changing. Today, the director of the Robert Koch Institute, which advises the government, said that the infection had now spread to care homes and hospitals. Older people, he said, had not appeared in our early tests, but now, unfortunately, we have to expect that the death rate will rise. It's what experts had predicted, a depressing development nonetheless for a country which has yet to experience the full force of the outbreak.
Jenny Hill. The curbs on freedom of movement around the world have crippled businesses, but perhaps none more so than the aviation industry. Some airlines have grounded their entire fleets and fired thousands of workers. Now one of the richest carriers, American Airlines, is applying for $12 billion in government aid. Theo Leggett told me more about the challenges facing the sector.
If you look at the major markets, so Europe, the United States, transatlantic routes, in many areas, up to 85-90% of flights have been cut. In fact, one major British airline, EasyJet, has grounded its entire fleet. Now, the majority of airline revenues come from paying passengers. Yes, there are still aircraft in the sky, but a lot of those are simply carrying cargo now. In fact, there are flights which would have been passenger flights which have been given over completely to cargo, but that simply isn't bringing in enough money. So according to the International Air Transport Association, IATA, in the 3 months to the end of June alone, the global industry is expected to make a net loss of $39 billion. Airlines are burning through cash like there's no tomorrow, and that's simply not sustainable, which is why they're appealing to governments and saying, look, we need support.
Yeah, I mean, only recently we were talking about the fact that the airline industry needed to do more to tackle climate change. Is there a sense that perhaps strings could be attached to any government aid given to the airline industry?
Well, strings are certainly being attached to aid that's being given at the moment, but not on environmental grounds. So, for example, in the United States, there are conditions attached to the kind of aid that American Airlines has just said it needs, which are, for example, that the company can't use its cash reserves to buy back shares in an effort to boost its share price, can't lay off any staff until September, that kind of thing. I think any kind of relaxation of environmental concerns is going to come down the line.
And how important is aviation to the global economy?
Aviation is very important for the global economy. I mean, it doesn't account for that much in terms of global trade in volumes because most global trade goes by ship. But what's transported by air tends to be high-value goods, perishable goods. So what we're talking about at the moment, for example, is temperature-sensitive pharmaceuticals, medicines that are badly needed but need to be transported quickly and carefully.
Theo Leggett. With an estimated third of the world under lockdown, video conferencing has become the way to keep in touch. Young people in particular are turning to an app called Houseparty. But some users claim that after they downloaded it, other applications on their phone or computer were hacked. Now the app's owners, Epic Games, are fighting back against the online rumours. Zoe Thomas sent this report from San Francisco.
Epic Games is offering $1 million for proof that it was the victim of a commercial smear campaign. The company says claims on social media that downloading Houseparty led to users' data being exposed were false. Beginning early Monday morning, Twitter users began posting screenshots they claimed showed applications like Spotify, PayPal, and Netflix being hacked. These users blamed Houseparty for those attacks, claiming the breaches came after they downloaded the video chat app, and called on other users to delete the software. Houseparty said there was no evidence its systems had been breached, and suggested users try stronger passwords.
Zoe Thomas in San Francisco. And still to come on the podcast,
the UV light surely breaks up the bacteria, making them inactive over a short period of time. It actually, quote unquote, burns them so that the UV light actually stops these bacteria and viruses from multiplying.
The Jamaican student hoping his invention will help in the fight against the coronavirus. Now, wash your hands, disinfect surfaces, keep your distance from others. All good advice for avoiding infection during the outbreak. But what if you live in a refugee camp? Stephanie Hegarty has been speaking to people in the Moria Migrant Centre on the Greek island of Lesbos.
OK, Okay. We're here in Moria Camp, Lesbos Island, Greece, and Europe.
Yasser is 18. He has a round face with wire-framed hipster glasses. He's Afghan and came here to Moria 5 months ago to claim asylum.
Here are some water taps that's supposed to be used. There's no water inside it. There's no water. How can a refugee prevent themselves of coronavirus when they don't have access to water?
We can't travel to Moria camp right now because Greece has a quarantine in place for visitors and we don't want to risk bringing the virus there. But Yasser and some other young filmmakers sent us this footage. They guide us through the camp.
And come with me. There is something more that I want to show you.
A lot of the paths are just dirt tracks. The homes are just tents, packed together, less than a metre apart. It's overcrowded, and there are bags of rubbish piled up everywhere. But one of the biggest problems is access to water. There aren't many taps.
It's disgusting. There is few hours that people have access to water, and at that time, it's overcrowded, and there are so many long queues to use the water.
Washing your hands regularly here just isn't an option.
How people can prevent themselves of coronavirus when this situation and condition is here?
And there are people everywhere, queuing up to wash dishes, to use the toilets, or to shower. This is a long, winding queue where hundreds of people wait to collect food every day, standing right next to each other. While most of Greece is on lockdown, there's no social distancing in Moria. Another big problem is soap. There's three cases of COVID-19 on Lesbos so far.
If people are becoming sick, we know they should be in self-isolation, and this is just impossible in Moria.
Stefan Obiere is the country director for the medical charity Médecins Sans Frontières, who provide medical services at the camp.
It's the worst setup that you could have, and if the outbreak starts in Moria, it's going to be extremely difficult to contain.
The Greek government say they're setting up some isolation containers at the camp, but they've also temporarily halted cash transfers, which asylum seekers were getting. That's to stop them leaving the camp to go to the ATM, but it makes it even harder to get supplies like soap. Still, Dean Mohammed and his group aren't giving up.
So this is our factory, and these are our volunteers.
They've set up a small workshop making cotton masks.
Hello, guys.
They know they're not the most effective, but in these tricky circumstances, they're determined to do what they can.
Stephanie Hegarty reporting. As the number of cases continues to rise in Africa, just under 5,500 as of Tuesday, there are fears about how quickly the outbreak could get out of control in countries already ravaged by conflict. The Red Cross has warned that health systems across the continent may even collapse. Somalia, which has been in a state of war for more than 30 years, is a prime example. Although it's only had three confirmed cases so far, the government is deeply concerned about the possible spread of COVID-19 and the virus propaganda being sent by the Islamist group Al-Shabaab. Our Africa editor Mary Harper reports.
In a recent communique, Al-Shabaab said coronavirus was being spread by what it described as crusader forces who've invaded Somalia and the disbelieving countries that support them. The militants, who control much of Somalia, have also said Muslims can't catch the disease. This is what the government is up against. In an effort to counter Al-Shabaab's messages and teach Somalis how to protect themselves, it's enlisted the support of the influential religious community. The Deputy Minister of Religious Affairs, Osman Adan Dubo, says their help is essential as they're the most trusted people in the country. After the closure of Somalia's tens of thousands of madrasas, Quranic teachers and imams have been recruited to spread the word about COVID-19. They'll drive around in cars mounted with loudspeakers to tell people to wash their hands for 20 seconds with soap and water and to maintain a safe distance from each other. The same messages will be transmitted from the minarets of mosques. But even if they get the right information, hundreds of thousands of Somalis won't be able to protect themselves. Displaced by violence, floods and drought, they live in overcrowded camps without access to soap and water and no way of keeping apart from each other. Somalia's most senior sheikh, Ali Deri, says anything that causes harm in Islam is not permissible and that certain practices, such as washing the dead, will have to change in order to stop the spread of the virus. People are also being encouraged to pray at home, although there's been no mention of closing mosques, a highly sensitive issue in this deeply religious country.
Mary Harper. The virus is affecting the world's animals in different ways. Some have more freedom to roam with fewer humans on their habitats. Others are suffering. Wildlife conservationists in Thailand say more than 1,000 elephants face starvation because their carers can no longer afford to feed them. An almost total absence of tourists means funding has dried up, as Celia Hatton reports.
The coronavirus outbreak has led to borders being closed across Asia, and that's meant an almost total shutdown of businesses that rely on tourism. And Thailand's no different. It's home to more than 4,000 captive elephants that usually rely on tourist dollars to pay for their care. But now their keepers are struggling to feed them. Elephants can eat up to 200 kilograms of food a day. One woman who runs an elephant sanctuary at Mae Chem in northern Thailand said that the financial hardship imposed by the loss of tourism would force elephants' keepers to choose between feeding themselves or their animals.
Celia Hatton. Now let's move away from the coronavirus to look at some of the day's other stories. And the United States has significantly changed its policy on Venezuela, where it's been wanting to get rid of President Nicolas Maduro for some time. It's one of many countries to recognise opposition leader Juan Guaido as the rightful president. But now the Trump administration is proposing a, quote, pathway to democracy for Venezuela, which could lead to the lifting of US sanctions. Mike Pompeo, the American Secretary of State, set out a plan for a transitional government until elections could be held in Venezuela in 6 to 12 months.
The president of the transitional government would not be able to run for president in those elections. Both Nicolas Maduro and Juan Guaido would accept the Council of State as the sole executive during this transitional period. If the conditions of the framework are met, including the departure of foreign security forces and elections deemed free and fair by international observers, then all remaining U.S. sanctions would be lifted.
Our America's editor, Candace Peart, told me more.
I think fundamentally the State Department is trying to take an opportunity that's emerged now with Venezuela being so weakened by the coronavirus. This is a real risk that it could be its health system could be entirely depleted by the coronavirus. Its economy is already crippled by crashing oil prices and by harsh U.S. sanctions. And so they're hoping really that this new plan, this proposal might be a plan that's interesting, particularly to the Maduro administration's main backers, the military, and that this, in a sense, could point the way for Venezuela to get out of the terrible mess it's in. So it's really taking advantage of the pressure that Venezuela is under now.
Yeah, and they recently ratcheted up the pressure on President Maduro. How is he likely to respond? And Juan Guaido, it seems that they might be distancing themselves slightly from him.
Well, yes. I mean, this plan comes less than a week after Mr. Maduro and other top officials were indicted by a U.S. court on drug trafficking and money laundering charges. And Mike Pompeo has said that the charges will remain in place. So essentially, the Maduro regime is being told nothing that they do will stop the U.S. pressing charges against them. While on the other hand, they're being asked to agree to a transition government. So it's quite difficult to see how this plan is actually going to happen. And also, certainly, it feels as if Juan Guaido, who's been supported by the U.S. administration for at least a year during his campaign to remove Mr. Maduro from power, is being, in a sense, being thrown into a situation with a very unrealistic set of parameters.
Candace Peart. Prince Harry and his wife Meghan have formally stepped down as senior members of Britain's royal family. The Duke and Duchess of Sussex are understood to have moved from Canada to California. Johnny Diamond reports.
What began not 2 years ago with a sun-drenched wedding watched by hundreds of millions closes with the couple reportedly establishing themselves in the hills of Los Angeles. No longer will they use the word royal in their titles or in organisations they set up on digital or social media. They intend, they say, to concentrate on family whilst they work on developing a charitable organisation. Their security, they say, they will pay for, but they do not deny that taxpayer-funded protection is still in place.
Johnny Diamond. Back now to the COVID-19 outbreak, and a device which kills bacteria on door handles is being tested to see whether it can destroy the coronavirus. It was invented by a student at the University of Technology in Kingston, Jamaica. 25-year-old Rayvon Stewart was inspired after witnessing a tragedy on the island. Richard Hamilton reports.
They say that necessity is the mother of invention, but in Rayvon Stewart's case, it was born out of compassion. 5 years ago, more than 40 babies born in Jamaican hospitals became infected with a lethal bacteria. Half of them died.
Babies were dying. They found out that it was a bacteria called Klebsiella that was killing all these newborn babies. It was just sad that so many mothers had to be going through this. It really tore me up, and I knew I had to find a solution for this problem.
Rayvon was determined to do something to stop such infections spreading again. He came up with a device called Zermosol, which automatically disinfects door handles using ultraviolet light.
We use special kind of lights to kill the bacteria and viruses, so we chose the spectrums of the UV light that was not harmful to humans, but was harmful to these bacteria. The UV light actually breaks up the bacteria, making them inactive over a short period of time. It actually, quote-unquote, burns them so that the UV light actually stops these bacteria and viruses from multiplying.
Rayvon was shortlisted for last year's Health Innovation Awards, hosted by the Commonwealth. There he met the Secretary-General, Baroness Scotland. She thinks his invention could play a crucial role in fighting the coronavirus pandemic and needs all the investment it can get.
To have a young man identify a significant problem for us globally and to come up with a simple to install device was amazing. And the innovation was brilliant. And I could see that it could be used in so many extraordinary settings because it kills 99.9% of the germs. And just look at how important that invention is now that we are faced with the most frightening coronavirus pandemic. And here, his invention has the potential to dramatically improve the opportunities for so many of us.
Rayvon made his first prototype in November 2018 and has sold models to two of the largest hospitals in Jamaica. He's now hoping to attract more funding so that his invention can go into mass production.
Richard Hamilton reporting. And that's all from us for now, but there'll be an updated version of the Global News podcast later. I'm Oliver Conway. Until next time, goodbye.
For teenagers like me, it's hard to imagine a world where the tech we take for granted didn't exist.
We didn't have email back then. You know, everything was mail, or we didn't have internet.
So in our new podcast, Worldwise Web, 12 of us from around the world will be spending time with the people who invented it.
We believed someday everybody would have a cell phone.
Finding out how they came up with their ideas.
I'm always saying yes to the weirdest of things just so I can find all those crazy things in life that are really fun.
And asking for advice.
You've got to figure out what drives you. What makes you really happy? Do that.
That's Worldwise Web from the BBC World Service.
You have conducted probably one of the greatest interviews I've ever had.
Search for Worldwise Web wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, bye. Thank you very much.